From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. We'll get ready for next hour. John Zaffis joins us. Exorcisms, poltergeists, and levitation. I will be playing an exorcism before he starts that interview. I shall forewarn you at that time, you might not want to listen to it if these things scare you in the darkness of wherever you may be. Well, he has talked about this before, but now he has provided a little bit more information, more specifics. Al-Qaeda apparently planned to hijack a commercial airplane with shoe bombers there. They were going to try to blow up the cockpit door and fly the plane into the Library Tower in Los Angeles. This, according to President Bush, describing just one of the many foiled terror attacks on the United States since 9/11. The plan, similar to the successful hijacking and flying of the planes into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon that killed more than 3,000 people over 4 years ago, was apparently stopped with the help of coalition partners who arrested key operatives. Library Towers, now known here in Los Angeles as U.S. Bank Tower, the plot apparently involved a Malaysian militant who was one of the leaders of a terrorist group, an Al-Qaeda-related group that is responsible for bombings in the Philippines and other nations in Southeast Asia. The president said that this individual recruited key operatives in Afghanistan who met with Osama bin Laden to develop the plan. The plot was derailed in early 2002 when a Southeast Asian nation arrested a key Al-Qaeda operative, according to the president, without naming the country. A man apparently hanged himself in an airplane lavatory during a flight that was diverted to Denver after his body was discovered. How would you like to be that passenger to open up that door? Or try to? Denver's medical examiner spokesperson said an autopsy was planned for the body of the 56-year-old man from Miami. This was a flight from United Airlines from Washington, D.C. to Los Angeles. A man with a name of Gerald Georgiadis, 56 years old, same age, was charged with arson and felony criminal mischief in Miami some time ago after a fire caused nearly $1 million in damage at a Ford dealership. The arson suspect was accused of driving his new Ford through the dealership showroom, pouring gasoline on it, and lighting it. Police say that he was upset about the price, and he may be the same individual. Email in from a police officer in Illinois. I shall not give you his district, his city. He simply says, George, I'm the midnight sergeant at the blank police department in Illinois. Over the last couple of years, other officers and I have been dispatched several times to the same address to investigate a 911 call described as open line, which means caller not on the line. We have discovered the address given is a very old, very creepy cemetery. I've brought this to the attention of the 911 coordinator, who has explained to me that there is no active or inactive phone line at that location. I believe this is some type of a technical problem and not a supernatural event. But why go looking for an EVP when they call us? That's from the police officer there. Thanks for that email. An American team in Egypt has found what appears to be intact, a tomb in the Valley of the Kings, the first found in the valley since that of King Tut in 1922. The tomb contains five or six mummies intact in the sarcophagi from the late 18th dynasty, about the same period as Tut, but the archaeologists have not yet had the time to access and identify them. The shaft leading to the tomb was discovered last autumn. The 18th dynasty ruled Egypt from 1567 BC to 1320 BC, a period during the country's power reached a peak. Most cable television subscribers would save money if allowed to pay for only a few channels that they want. Now listen to this, kind of novel, right? Normally, if you have cable television, you're stuck buying a certain kind of package. Well, the Federal Communications Commission has done a study which has now reversed the agency's earlier finding that simply says now that you would benefit from this. The analysis by FCC staff provides new support for consumer groups pushing for a pick-and-choose pricing system to replace the bundled services offered by the cable industry. Cable companies fear that that would diminish their wide distribution. That would be interesting, though, if you just want to have six or seven channels, that's all you pay for instead of this lump sum. Here's something for you if you just like to play with your computer. A real estate valuation website could alter U.S. home buying terrain launched on the internet now. This is called, and I'm going to give it to you, and we're probably going to crash this company's server, but it's neat because I've been playing around with it today. It's got a satellite picture. You can look at your house. They'll give you an evaluation, which, by the way, seems to be a little low. Some real appraisers don't think that it's matching the price of what some of these houses sell for. But if you have a home and you want to play around with this, it's www.zillow.com. It is crammed with traffic today, but it provides estimated home prices, satellite pictures of your house. It has just taken off over the last few days, and it has been jam-packed. Listen to this, though. The website made its debut backed by $32 million in venture capital funding and headed by the chief executive, Rich Barton, who is the creator of the online travel service Expedia. Can you imagine that? Venture capital money, these are investors, institutions, or wealthy individuals. They came up with $32 million to back this website idea. The website charts show how specific home values have changed over time compared to others in chosen neighborhoods. They planned to generate a profit from advertising. Isn't that interesting? $32 million investment there. Here's something we probably all know. In the late 20th century, the Northern Hemisphere experienced its most widespread warmth for 1,200 years. They're pointing to greenhouse gases as the cause. Yesterday, we were talking about an asteroid that on a German website is supposed to plow into the planet August of this year. Well, I checked in yesterday with planetary scientist Daniel Derda. I said, Daniel, I don't know. This doesn't sound right. What do you think? He said, George, I agree. It doesn't sound right. We will check into it. The website was talking about a 2-kilometer diameter asteroid, which could cause all kinds of problems. But Daniel checked it out for us, planetary scientist, currently the research scientist at the Southwest Research Institute in Boulder, Colorado. And Daniel, I trust our instincts were correct on this one?
Hi, George. Good evening. Yeah, I think they were. It's an interesting-sounding story. But the thing that tipped me off to it, sounding like a potential red herring there, was the designation for the asteroid. It was referred to as an asteroid ALH-2804-C, which sounds sufficiently astronomical. We all, we astronomers are guilty of adding these weird designations to things and all. But this just doesn't sound like a designation that that any of the folks that I know that work in the asteroid community actually use, and that kind of tipped me off to it.
So. If an asteroid truly was on its way,
yes,
you'd find out about it pretty darn fast, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. There's a group of us that, we kind of get the first couple emails that start to go out there around the astronomical world when things like this get interesting. For instance, back, a year ago when 2004 MN4 was... When the probability of impact went up to 1 in 20 just before the holiday break, there were about a dozen of us where these emails were burning constantly. And with this particular one, you informed me of this particular one, and I had to go and contact my colleague who's in charge of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory's Near Earth Object Program and ask him what this sounded like. And he agreed. It just is not a designation we use.
And it had all the makings of a movie. Talk show host calls his favorite asteroid hunter who goes looking for this object. but it had the wrong ending, huh?
It just doesn't. I think we got a red herring here.
2 kilometers in diameter. If something like this does impact the planet, is it a global killer?
Yeah, 2 kilometers is something we definitely would be worried about. Even a kilometer, quite frankly, would be pretty bad. These are the ones that are pretty much the sort of threshold civilization killers. Enough to put enough dust in the atmosphere, enough ozone destroying elements in an impact of that size to really essentially destroy the entire ozone layer.
Well, Daniel, we love you here at Coast to Coast, but let's hope we never have to call you about one impending asteroid coming our way.
Yeah, I hope not either. It's not something we actually want to witness.
All right, great. Daniel Derda. Thanks, Dan.
Sure. Sure.
Appreciate it. He checked it out for us, and that's that story. By the way, Cincinnati, a video surveillance company there called CityWatcher.com, now requires employees there to use Verichip human implantable microchips to enter a secure data center. Now, the Verichip is a glass encapsulated RFID tag that is injected into the flesh of the triceps area of the arm to uniquely number and identify individuals. Is this something that's going to be happening all around the country? Telling your employees you're going to have chips? Well, in a moment, Catherine Albrecht will be our guest. We will talk with her about this situation. Catherine, of course, as you know, is the founder of Casbian, Consumers Against Supermarket Privacy Invasion and Numbering. We'll be back with Catherine in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And as I mentioned, Catherine Albrecht is our guest this hour. She's the founder of Casbian, Consumers Against Supermarket Privacy Invasion and Numbering. Incredible story, Catherine, that this company in Cincinnati now, I guess you could say, compelling its employees to get the encapsulated tags put in them.
Well, you know what they've done, George? They've made it so that the employees who need to access this secure data room where they're storing video footage of the streets of Cincinnati have to have a Verichip, and that, of course, is the glass-encapsulated RFID human implant device that can be used for medical purposes or even to make payments. And what they've done is they've installed reader devices at the entrance to that room so that anyone wanting to get in there would have to have one of these devices either implanted in their flesh, as two of their employees have done, or as one of the employees has, he actually has not yet embedded it in his flesh. He has it hanging from, encased in a plastic heart-shaped device hanging off of his keychain.
Like in a locket or something, huh?
Yeah, kind of.
And he just walks up to the reader and just flashes it, I guess.
Well, the idea here is that they wanted to upgrade their proximity card system because, you know, the proximity card, the plastic card that people hold up to the reader and it unlocks the door.
Of course, yeah, we all do that.
And, of course, we're all seeing those going into workplaces across America. That's based on the same technology. It's based on an RFID or a radio frequency identification tag. It's got a little remote readability there so you don't have to actually contact the reader. And one of the problems, though, with that, with those proximity or prox card systems is that they can be easily cloned and hacked by other people. And so what this company decided to do was to add an additional layer of security by putting this Verichip reader in the doorway as well. So now, unless you have both a proximity card and a Verichip, you won't be able to open that door.
Is this a sign of things to come, Catherine?
Well, you know, I think, George, it's important because this is the first time we've actually seen a U.S. employer publicly acknowledging that they have actually required or requested that their employees use this Verichip system to perform the duties of their job. So, you know, presumably if you want to work at this company called City Watcher, and we can talk a little bit about what they do, which is creepy and Big Brother. Is
I
right.
Love that name, by the way.
Yeah, isn't it amazing?
Watcher.
I know. It's straight out of Central Casting. But if you want to work at City Watcher and you want to be able to access video surveillance videotapes of the streets of Cincinnati, they're under government contract that they're filming people going about their daily business, then you have to have one of these Verichip implants.
What is wrong, Catherine, with the old system of flashing your little ID card to let you in, or some companies will have the fingerprint ID? What's wrong with those systems?
Well, it depends on who you ask. From a security standpoint, this system is really no better than the prox card system. And in fact, one of the things we found very shocking is that the company that actually provided this technology to City Watcher is a company called Six Sigma Security. And this company, my co-author of our book, Spy Chips, Liz McIntyre, contacted them yesterday. And the folks at Six Sigma Security were boasting about how fabulous this new Verichip how secure this door was now going to be. And yet what they didn't realize is that just last month, a security researcher named Jonathan Westhues proved that it is easy to hack and clone one of these Verichip devices as well. So not only do they now have the hackable prox card system, but essentially, if you have a Verichip implant in your arm, as these employees now do, Anyone with the right reader device who can get near your arm can pick up the information on that tag using radio waves without your knowledge, invisibly scan that tag, and then replicate it.
And as you well know, there are two different there's two different ways of verbiage with the word hacker, because you know, they may also hack your arm off and use it. I mean, that's possible, isn't it?
Well, in fact, not only is it possible, George, but in fact, in our new book, Spy Chips Threat, we actually talk about how these systems are vulnerable. And there's a case where a Malaysian businessman named K. Kumaran actually had a fingerprint reader on his late model Mercedes. So, you know, it's very secure. Unless you have his fingerprint, you can't start the car.
Oh, don't tell me. Don't tell me.
It's a bad story.
Go ahead. Tell me.
The band of carjackers who carjacked his car and kidnapped him got tired of making him press his finger to the ignition key every time they wanted to start his car.
God.
So they took a machete and they literally chopped off Mr. Kumaran's finger and left him naked and bleeding by the side of the road while they drove off in his car.
And it still works, I guess, right?
Well, you know, until the finger decomposes. You know, in the case of a Verichip, because it's encapsulated in glass and it's supposed to last a long time, I guess they could have maybe simply removed Mr. Kumaran's arm or some of the flesh from his arm, and they could have been driving his car for a long time.
You know, Catherine, I was born in 1950. So, you know, I went through the 60s and the 70s and the 80s and 90s, and I see where we are now as we go into really the next millennium in a big way. Life was so much simpler a few years ago. Why this push? Why this rush to get us into this technological era with some of these things that we really don't need to exist?
Well, I'll tell you, part of it, I think, is simply driving the economy. I mean, realistically, the whole push for this RFID, this technologization of everything, you know, we have exported all of our manufacturing and industrial jobs overseas. So there's really not much left for our economy to do unless you can invent a whole new thing to keep everybody really busy. And turning things like, you know, the plain old keys hanging off your keychain, well, that's not employing too many people after those keys are made. So let's come up with something that's incredibly complicated and it requires lots of database storage and requires, you know, people to remain very busy in this information economy.
Well, you know, there's, on the face of it, there's nothing wrong with inventory control by a company as long as it stops at the door. Yeah, unfortunately, it's not going to stop at the door. It's going to trail along wherever you go. I'm pretty sure my friends in St. Louis were telling me that Anheuser-Busch has got an inventory control system where they can very easily, from a computer back at their home office, monitor what beers are being sold and how they're being sold off the shelf in the various stores. Now, somebody was telling me this a couple of years ago. I don't know if they've implemented it yet or not, but that's an aggressive company, and they know how to market. They may have already put this in.
Well, that's actually what the whole RFID inventory control system is that we, of course, describe in our book, Spy Chips, where we devote a chapter to the store of the future. And in there, you've got companies like Procter & Gamble, Gillette, NCR, the national cash register company that makes the cash registers and scanners for Walmart. All of these companies are saying that the wave of the future will be that every physical object on Earth will have an RFID tag, and that these items will be trackable on the shelf, they'll be trackable in the warehouse. We even talk about a patent that can track items as you bring them into your home. They would literally put a reader device in the doorway so that as you carry items into your home, whether they're in a grocery bag or in your purse, literally every single item would be scanned, and its tiny radio frequency tag would reveal information about what's going in and out of your house. And of course, if once people begin having RFID tags embedded in their arms, then obviously you're coming and going. Any doorway you pass through, or any, I don't know, boulder out in the public park that they've embedded with one of these reader devices could be scanning you as you walk by.
They'll know exactly where you are all the time.
Yeah, and you know, the Anheuser-Busch example is a good one, because one of the things that Procter & Gamble talks about that we included in the book, they actually talk about a rigged refrigerator where the refrigerator would be hooked up to the internet, it would have an RFID reader on the shelf, and as you removed, as they describe it, the last can of Coke, the system would actually know that you were about to be in the market for soda, and it would then send an ad to your TV to run an ad for a competing product.
Or it sends something to the distributor who knows, well, hey, it's time to restock.
There you go. And, you know, they can scan your trash, too, and do the same thing.
Catherine, stay with us. We're going to open up the phone lines if you have a question about chips with Catherine Ulbrecht. Also, would you get chipped? Yes or no? I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, I got an urgent email this morning from those who are running the After Dark newsletter for us and for the network. And they said, George, we had told you that we will run out of CDs, the Perfect Possession Exorcism CDs this Friday. So please cut off this promotion. Well, apparently they have several boxes left. They are going to carry it through the end of this month. Then they will end it. And they wanted me to let you know, so I have now done that. So if you're interested, you get the free CD. It's a classic show, an Art Bell interview with the late Father Malachi Martin on exorcisms called Perfect Possession. When you subscribe to the After Dark newsletter, and you get one of those every month, call 1-888-727-5505. You can go online at coasttocoastam.com. One of the upcoming issues will be with our own science advisor and the head of the enterprisemission.com, Richard C. Hoagland. He's going to be interviewed by our own webmaster, Lex Lonehood, who's a contributing writer to the After Dark newsletter. It's going to be an in-depth look behind the man behind the face on Mars and other issues. And, of course, Richard was one who told us also that not to worry about that asteroid, that he didn't think it was real. So that was backed up with the planetary scientist Daniel Derda. So the CD is available through the end of February. So those of you who are ready to jump on board and do it, it's all there for you. And welcome back to Coast, Catherine Ulbrecht, our guest, and your phone calls this hour. Catherine, would they have to drag you kicking and screaming to get a chip?
Boy, you know, I'll tell you, as a Christian, not only would they have to drag me kicking and screaming, but there's absolutely nothing they could do to get me to take a chip. I'm referring, of course, to the last book of the Bible, the book of Revelation, where there's a very clear prediction that there will be a time in the future where people will be unable to buy or sell unless they have a number that they use to do the buying and selling, and unless they have a mark on their right hand or their forehead. And, of course, that's the mark of the beast. And this technology raises a lot of red flags for Christians.
Okay, let's go to the phones. They're all piling up for you. Let's go east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, this is Faith. No, I would not get a chip.
You would not?
No. I don't want Big Brother knowing what I'm doing and who I'm doing what with.
Yeah, well, that's
true. None of their dang business.
What if they force you to do it? What if they, you know, what if you can't buy anything?
Just shoot me.
You're really going to take it that far, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I just feel, you know, privacy is being violated in a number of ways. And, Catherine, I've got some interesting information for you. Up here in my area, near my residence, they are building a factory and manufacturing company where you know, they're building these chips.
Are you in North Dakota?
No, I'm in Ohio, Miamisburg, to be exact.
Boy, they're starting this crop up everywhere, I guess.
I'm telling you, I heard this less than a week ago on the news, and I went, oh, my gosh.
You know, in North Dakota, the first major company they put in the United States was actually by Alien Technology, which just finished building a very big production facility to make RFID chips right there in North Dakota. Now it sounds like they're in Ohio, and I think before we turn around, we're going to see these things everywhere.
Alien Technology?
Alien Technology. I didn't make it up. That's the name they chose for their own company. You know, it's so funny, George. It's like my co-author Liz and I were talking about this, and we said, you know, if we wrote a novel and called these companies City Watcher, you know, one of the principals of City Watcher, one of the founders is a man named Sean Darks. We've got Alien Technology. We've got another major RFID supplier called Matrix. You know, if we made this stuff up and put it out there, I think that our editor would say, you know, this is too hokey. You've got to go back and come up with some more realistic names.
What are they trying to tell us?
You know, I'm not sure. There's another company out there that does surveillance. It's called Hiss. It's wild. You know, it
Hiss,
wouldn't surprise
like a snake?
Me. Some Hiss like a snake. There's another company that literally calls itself Big Brother. It watches parolees.
My God.
It would not surprise me if at some point when they actually do come out with this chip that they're going to ask us all to take, if as a joke somebody doesn't say, why don't we just stamp 666 right on the darn thing.
Back to the west of the Rockies line, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is John, and I'm in California, almost to Sacramento.
Hi, John.
On the road.
Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
I would not get chipped. There's no way in the world you could ever make me get chipped.
What if they make it easy for you in your trucking all around the country?
Well, you know what? The funny thing is I have a satellite dish on my truck so they can tell where my truck is all the time. So I figure that's bad enough. I'd rather not them know where I am when I'm out of my truck.
You know, thanks for your comments, John. Eventually, Catherine, though, someone is going to make it a law that people have to be chipped. So here's my question to you. Given the fact that that's going to happen, how are they going to leak that in on us?
Well, I'll tell you, the guy that has me scared right now is the former Bush cabinet official, Tommy Thompson, who, when he was the Director of Health and Human Services, was literally the most powerful public health official on Earth. These guys who manufacture this human implant chip somehow managed to lure him away and get him on their board of directors.
Now, isn't he also the one, because we talked about this a few months ago, he said he was going to get a chip, right?
Yeah, but we still haven't heard that Mr. Thompson's actually rolled up his own sleeve.
No,
yet.
I would assume if he did get the chip that they'd go public with that.
They said they were going to hit it out of the park as a big media event, and I haven't seen any balls flying out of that park.
Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
George?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey. Yeah, I would never, ever, ever get chipped. No way.
Why not?
Well, you know, I'm a 4-year listener to Alex Jones' radio show, and I'm a diehard libertarian constitutionalist, and that just kind of goes against the very fabric of what America is supposed to be about.
Oh, man, can you imagine them trying to chip Alex one day?
That would just be very ugly.
Oh, my, it takes 6 people to hold him down.
Yeah, you ain't kidding. One of the things I just wanted to bring up, I live in a very rural town right now in North Carolina, and they actually managed at the local library to get the Spy Chips book that Catherine wrote. And for just the audience out there, there's a chapter in the book called The Nightmare Scenario. And there's kind of a subheading called Government, the Deadliest Force on the Planet. And it's all about democide and just how governments throughout the 20th century are basically the largest mass murderers of their people. And just the thought that this RFID technology could fall into the hands of government to be used against the people, it just horrifies me. And that's one of the main reasons why I called up. And then my question to Catherine is just post-publication, have there been any recent developments in RFID technology that the Coast to Coast audience should be aware of?
Well, probably the biggest development is that the Christian version of our book just came out last week. It's called Spy Chips Threat. It is a paperback version, so those of you who are holding off until the price drop down, this is your opportunity. The Spy Chips Threat is essentially an updated version of Spy Chips written specifically with an eye to the 83% of the public, of the American public, that is Christian, according to a recent ABC poll. And these are the folks who would share our concern that, you know, at some point this technology could actually make it possible to fulfill that prophecy that you wouldn't be able to buy or sell without a number. I'd say, aside from Spy Chips Threat being out, which we're very excited about, and my story there about my grandmother warning me about this technology when I was a little girl, and sort of my following retail surveillance and all of the technologies going in the cash registers and the cashless society that's coming and the use of credit cards and all of that. I'd say probably the biggest developments in RFID are the fact that now the passport, starting in October of this year, will have an RFID tag, but interestingly, some Dutch researchers actually managed to hack the encryption on that international passport standard. So that thing is not secure. The VeriChip is not secure because Jonathan West Hughes managed to hack that easily. We'd also know that the VeriChip Corporation recently had to file some public papers for its IPO, its stock release. And in those public papers, they actually identify some amazingly bad facts about their company. One of them, for example, they say that they're worried about lawsuits because the records associated with people's chips, if they take one for medical purposes, may not be available in the event of an emergency. People could die if they rely on this chip as their sole way to transmit that information to a doctor.
A little disclaimer, huh?
Unbelievably, George, they even say that this chip may not be able to transmit its information to a reader if it's in the vicinity of lots of other radio transmissions, and they specifically identify one place where that might happen. How about an ambulance? And you know what their solution is?
What?
They say you have to remove the patient out of the ambulance to read their chip.
So you hold him up in the air for a little bit.
Incredible. Can you imagine you're you know, in a snowstorm by the side of the road, and the ambulance guys are pulling you out of the ambulance to get you 10 feet away from the thing so they can read your chip?
Until the read comes and they put you back in again.
Crazy.
Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Yes, sir.
Roger calling in from Nebraska.
Hi, Roger. Go ahead.
Hey, Catherine.
Yes, George. Roger, go ahead.
Yeah, Catherine, I just wanted to chime in, and I wanted to say that, yes, I would get a chip, and I would do it especially for the convenience.
Wow, you're one of the few, Roger.
Yes, I would. And you know, I just wish that people would not be so naive to believe that we're already being spied on, like Catherine says, just about a lot of the things that you buy at the store, people are already tracking us.
Now, what do you mean by, Raj, what do you mean by convenience, that you'd get chipped for convenience?
Well, here's a for instance. I can't wait until I can buy this little pad that goes on my door. It'll eliminate my keys to my house. And all I got to do when I've got arms full of groceries, all I got to do is walk up to my door. The pad will automatically read the chip that I have, and it'll automatically unlock my doors, and I just walk right in.
Let me ask you this, Roger. Do you ever go to restaurants or bars?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, all I'd have to do is bump up against you when you're in that restaurant or that bar, and I could snag that number right off your chip, and before you've even finished your sandwich, I could be home getting into your house.
How would you do that?
Well, that's exactly what Jonathan Westhues describes when he hacked the chip. He bumped into, there's a Wired reporter for Wired magazine who had a chip implanted specifically to prove how easy it would be to do what I just described. She got together with this guy. He bumped up against her chip with his reader device, and he spells it all out on his website, which is linked from our website at spychips.com, how he managed to clone her chip.
Yeah.
And you can't prevent it because this stuff will transmit right through your clothes. So unless, Roger, you're going to wear, I don't know, a tinfoil shirt to cover up your Verichip, you're not going to be able to prevent that radio signal from being transmitted through your arm to anybody who wants to pick it up.
All right, Roger, you take care. Tinfoil shirt, huh? Somebody will invent that along with tinfoil hats, which I think they already have out there in the marketplace. Next up, let's go to our East of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, good morning, Jim. Northern Ohio here. Look, I would not get a chip for this reason. I think we're already being externally monitored, especially when you take a look at supermarket discount cards. When you swipe them, they know automatically what your buying habits are. That's why you're not allowed to share them with the person behind you anymore, because then it would muddy up the waters about how their buying habits are to where yours are. And I had a friend that actually slipped in a supermarket and fell. And when he brought the lawsuit against the supermarket, they looked at his buying habits and they said, you know what? This guy seems to be buying a whole lot of wine. So they tried to point the finger at him and saying that he was an alcoholic, and that's why he slipped in the store. So what they did is just monitor you by your buying habits with the supermarket discount card. The RFID, it's already here. All we have to do is swipe our card, and they know what our buying habits are.
Well, and the incentive for the discount card is exactly that. You're going to get a little price break.
Exactly. And isn't that something that makes it entices you? It tells you, go ahead and use it, but while you're using it, they're going to find out everything about your buying habits.
Well, I got to chime in here on these supermarket cards. You know, that's actually the subject of my doctoral dissertation at Harvard, and I'm finishing that up. I will be Dr. Albrecht come June of this year. So I have traveled all around the country. I've talked to people all over the nation, and I've been working on this supermarket card issue since 1999. It's why I founded Caspian. And what we found, and George, now you're old enough to remember this too, before these cards were here, there were discounts and sales available at every store just by walking through the door. And what we found through our research is when they started attaching strings and making you carry this numbered plastic card to identify yourself to buy your groceries for the supposed discounts, those discounts were actually not as good as they were before the cards came along. So you're actually paying more now for the privilege of being watched and for the privilege of being conditioned to showing a numbered ID card to buy the food you need to feed your family and survive.
I'm old enough to remember putting the feed in the back of a carriage and having the horse pull it away.
Oh,
west of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Linda in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Hi, Linda.
And I wouldn't take the chip for anything.
No way, huh?
No way. And I wanted to tell you, a while ago, this has been a few years, I have a TV that is not cable ready in my basement in my family room, and I had a cable box for it, and I had a partial flood in my basement, so I had everything moved up over in front of the TV and on top of the TV so I couldn't get to it, and they decided to come up with an updated cable box. So they brought it, showed up at my house with it, and I told them, you can't get to the TV right now, and they said, well, we'll just leave it for you, and because I said, I'll have no problem hooking it up, and they said, okay, we'll leave it for you.
Right.
Well, I didn't get it hooked up for a while, and I get this letter from my cable company saying, we noticed you haven't hooked up your cable box.
Oh, they know.
And, boy, that cable box didn't get hooked up.
Did you know that they can actually see you, Linda?
Uh-uh.
Oh, yeah.
I figured.
You put that digital box up, they've got a camera inside, they can see you walking around your house.
Now, this wasn't a digital box. This was just the regular.
Oh, then you'd be okay.
But,
I was kidding you, by the way.
Also, Catherine, I bought your book right after it came out, and I had an RFID chip in the book.
No, well, and this is an important thing to clarify, and thank you for bringing that up. As far as we know, none of our copies of Spy Chips have actually been spy chipped. You know, it's one of the things Liz and I talked about when we were doing Spy Chip, and especially Spy Chip's threat, was, you know, should we write it into the contract that they can't put an RFID tag on the book? And what they have been putting on the book, though, in various bookstores are the anti-theft tags that look a lot like RFID. And, in fact, there's a whole chapter in both of the books that talks about how they're migrating those anti-theft systems, you know, the portals on either side of the doorway
goes off and they come and tackle you outside.
Yeah, exactly. Well, they're upgrading those to where they would be able to read not only anti-theft tags like the one that Linda's found, but also RFID tags like the one in Spy Chips that we show woven into someone's shirt, like a Calvin Klein clothing label. So literally they could scan you coming and going, know what was in your purse. IBM actually talks about the person tracking unit where they'd want to scan women's purses and see if they're carrying baby bottles or diapers and then spam them with in-store advertising. So all of those anti-theft technologies are going to begin to converge on this whole RFID system, so everything will ultimately be trackable through those doorway portals.
Well, Catherine, we will continue to monitor this evolving and rapid technology. And, of course, thanks for talking to us about the Cincinnati company, where they're kind of encouraging their employees to get chipped so they can enter the secure data center.
Well, it's not too late. There's just two of them, so only two employees in the U.S., and I'd like for all your listeners not to make sure there's not a third. So.
Let's hope it's not a epidemic, huh?
Yep, keep your eyes peeled.
All right.
And people can find us at spychips.com if they want to keep up on our news releases. We've got a free newsletter. Encourage people to sign up.
All right, thanks a lot. Catherine Albrecht, I'm George Norrie. Now, we're going to be back in a moment with our very special guest tonight, John Zaffis, and we're going to talk about exorcisms, poltergeists, levitation, and I'm going to play an exorcism for you out of Russia. I played this many, many months ago. I do want to warn you, if you're alone, if it's dark, it could scare you.